Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of May 27th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. Well, Mariah, in the world of climate, one of the very important things to think about is how to communicate the whole question of climate change. Because climate change is such an overarching kind of topic, it sometimes seems like difficult to explain and put into people's heads the idea of what's going on, or the right idea. It's unclear what the right idea is, but that's I guess, is part of the problem. Tell me, what's going on in terms of communicating the issues of climate?
Yeah, well, so, you know, I had the great fortune of sitting down with Sarah Finney Robinson today in a meeting. Sarah Finney Robinson is a, you know, behavior change expert. She's a journalist. She has launched this project called the 51% Project, which is a data-driven communications initiative to get concerned Americans who are ready to become active, sort of involved in work and in initiatives. It's really a fantastic project. And mm-hmm. So we were talking a lot about there's a way that you can frame things and engage people to get them to coalesce around initiatives. And I think in some sense the climate deniers have done that really effectively, right? And all of us who have the climate science so solidly on our side, right? 97% of the scientists are on our side. Somehow there's doubt, even though there's none. And a lot of it is the framing. And, you know, I actually, there's a couple of links on Sarah Finney Robinson's 51% Project webpage that show this great ad where they have, you know, it says, if 97% of your dentists said you should pull a tooth, would you pull it or would you leave it in? Right. You know, and it's really clever and it's very cute. And you see all the dentists are shaking their heads saying, don't leave that tooth in, you know, I mean, you know, there's also another great sort of video about communicating climate change that maybe we can put up a link to where, you know, they say, well, how should you talk about climate change? How do you engage someone? And you see this guy and he's kind of going after it with all these facts, like blah, blah, blah. And the people are glazing over. And Right. Instead they talk about, no, you know, find a way to connect with a person on something that matters to them. And instead, you know, he asks this man, he says, so tell me about your daughter. And then he kind of engages with him about climate action and why it's important on the basis of the future for this man's daughter, right? And that's obviously a way more effective way to connect people to it. And of course, you know, in this messaging, you want it to be positive, right? And hopeful. That's an important piece of it. And so finding, you know, really focusing on solutions is important. You also have to kind of focus on the urgency, and that's equally important. So, you know, kind of exploring the facets of this is a whole field that, you know, I'm really fascinated by and enjoy reading about. But The Guardian also came out with a report recently, not a report, but an article talking about how we're not framing it well, and we need to start framing the problems we have with climate change in a way that really makes people take notice. And again, it's a hard balance. You don't want it to be sort of sound like it's hopeless, but some of the things that The Guardian is recommending.
This is the Guardian newspaper in England.
Yeah, sorry, The Guardian newspaper, which you know, they've done a ton of reporting.
Very good place to follow if you want.
Very good. Yeah. Yep. They have an outstanding. They did a whole, you know, more time than certainly anyone in the United States has devoted to climate change. Not anyone, sorry, I shouldn't say anyone, but, you know, the major news outlets in the United States have not devoted the appropriate amount of time to climate coverage. But But The Guardian came out in May, just this week, came out with this article by Damian Carrington, saying that they have a new style, that it's updated its style guide to talk about terms that more accurately describe the environmental crises facing the world. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, basically they say that the term climate change sounds sort of passive and gentle, and it's not effective for what scientists are talking about, which is a crisis. It's a catastrophe for humanity. And so terms instead of like climate emergency, climate crisis, climate breakdown are favored over climate change. They say that it's important to be scientifically precise while also communicating clearly with readers on this very important issue.
Well, it seems like that's the job of the paper. They must be precise, right? The people that are communicating daily to hundreds of thousands of readers, right? They have to choose their words carefully and thoughtfully. I mean, so what you're saying is this is after more thought, these kinds of words are better choices than the old words.
Well, and I think it kind of couples with this interesting, so yes, both scientists and journalists have to choose their words thoughtfully and carefully. And I think that what's ended up happening is that the words have been chosen very conservatively,
mm-hmm.
you know, right? So scientists they come out and say there's a possibility that these things will happen, but we can't say with 100% certainty, because that's how science is. Nothing can be 100% certain, because it's maybe based on modeling, and you know, there is maybe it's 97% certain, but it's 3% uncertain, right? And so this care and conservative approach has given wiggle room for, you know, deniers to step in.
And I think just that. You know, you normally quote an uncertainty in your measurement, right? That's a technical word, the very precise meaning, right, about the statistical standard deviation of how likely it is you think the actual answer is close to your own answer. But that term uncertainty is poisonous in the general public. It's kind of like the idea of, positive feedback has a very precise technical meaning that has nothing to do with an attaboy slap on the back kind of positive feedback that you think of, right? I mean, they're just two completely different things.
The methane cycle that is having positive feedback, meaning we're getting more and more methane in the atmosphere. Not an attaboy.
Not an attaboy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know if it's in the Guardian's new rules, but I've seen articles that talk about the difference, you know, how climate, climate skeptics versus climate deniers, right? Denier is too harsh a term, right?
Yeah. So that's one of the other things they did. They said that they've updated their style guide. They've updated, instead of saying climate skeptic, which is actually, you know, sort of soft, as you say, they've taken it a step further. They say, no longer are we going to say climate skeptic. We are going to say climate science denier. We are going to call it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You are someone who is denying the science of climate change. So, right, that word change from climate skeptic, meaning someone, you know, it's a set of beliefs that you can kind of like maybe, you know, not fully believe, to someone who's denying the fact that gravity exists, right?
So yeah, I mean, I think it's good to be skeptical. I consider myself a skeptic on most things, right? Skepticism is a sound, long-standing philosophical principle, right?
Right.
So, but you can be, but a skeptic, if you're a skeptic, by implicit in that is that you are able to be convinced, right? You're not skeptical as a matter of, you're not disbelieving as a matter of principle. Right? A skeptic needs to be convinced. And I think the better word, as you say, is climate science denier, who's just got a philosophical, but they're never going to accept it.
Right. I mean, so, you know, if I take a ball and I drop it and it falls, you're not going to say to me, oh, I'm skeptic of gravity.
Right.
Right. You may not fully understand what gravity is or how it works or what this, but we know that gravity is a scientific you found like that that's something we know exists, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of the same thing. It's like saying you instead of saying gravity skeptic, you're saying a gravity denier,
right?
You know,
right.
So instead, right, it's like, no, you are a climate science denier. You are actually denying the science that we understand and know to be true. And that's kind of a ridiculous position to take, but if you want to take that, fine, but we're going to call you what you are, you know.
Wow. We need to adopt this terminology, Mariah.
I know. We, I like
I'm going to
it's not climate denier. It's climate science denier.
I'm going to have to rewrite the Climate Minute style guide.
And so, you know, the other thing the Guardian jumped on, which I think is so important, they've told, right, so, of course, fair and balanced reporting is a key tenet in journalism, right? Mm-hmm. You know, give both sides of the story. The Guardian has, the BBC has, you know, in September said that they get coverage of climate change wrong too often. And they have told their staff, you do not need a denier to balance the debate. They release them from this, like, you know,
journalistic equivalence.
Exactly, because that's a massive problem, I think, in a lot of the, you know, reporting, is that they feel like they need to bring in someone on both sides of the story. And it's like, well, there's not two sides to this story.
Right.
There's the science. And then there's the people who are trying to create doubt when there is none. And that's not something we should be giving airtime to. I mean, yes, you, like you said, it's good to be a skeptic. It's good to make sure that the science is sound. But that's been done.
Right.
We're beyond that. We're 30 years beyond that. I mean.
No, I agree that the longstanding practice of having a climate denier, a climate science denier in your article is would be okay if you quoted 97 scientists that were legitimate, and then you could quote the three that were crazy, right? That would be okay. But if you have one guy who says, you know, you have the IPCC, and then you have one crazy guy who says he doesn't believe it, it's sort of in the average person's mind, it just poisons the whole.
It makes it seem like it's 50-50 somehow. So, and then there's this other sort of exciting report that's, there was at the end of April, there was the Columbia Journalism Review. They held a summit at the Columbia Journalism School. They brought a bunch of journalists together to talk about climate communication and what they can do about it. And they came up with this Covering Climate Now project.
Okay.
And basically, it's getting media together to really start telling the story the way it should have been told a long time ago. In fact, one of the links that they sort of mention is this story that says the headline is, "What if reporters covered climate crisis like Edward R. Murrow covered the start of World War II?" Which is how we should be covering this, because this is such a massive, this is the biggest challenge and crisis we've ever faced, and we should be talking about it every day. You know, Bill McKibben says that there is the looming possibility of extinction. That's our extinction, right?
not the panda bears, it's ours.
No, it's our extinction, and so it's something we need to be working on assiduously. And
I mean, I think that's one of the you know, there is that big question of why, what is the difference between coverage of World War II and coverage of the climate, the looming threat of climate change? And it must have something to do, as I think you were saying before, of the clarity of who the bad guy is, right? World War II is much easier to say, you know, to point at someone and say, all right, there's the guy. Those are the ones we got to worry about. Whereas with climate change, you have to look in a mirror.
Yeah, I mean, exactly right. It's easier to come together and as a nation and say we're gonna fight this
external threat.
This other nation, this external threat. But right, this is the kind of thing where it's like, you know, we have to do this for ourselves, and we have to face the hard decisions and
I think it's important to keep in mind that there is a target. I mean, it is true that the oil companies, however you want to identify them, have been purveying a product since the early 80s that they knew was damaging to the planet, and in which in the last 30 or 40 years, most of the carbon dioxide that is in the air has been put up. So it's possible to say, I mean, I fell prey to the thing just a moment ago by saying, well, we need to look in the mirror. That's where the enemy is. I'm not so sure that's true anymore, right? There are big forces at work, systemic forces at work that are making a profit, and they want you to think it's your fault that when you look in the mirror and say, oh, I'm a bad person, I use oil, and that they are not the ones. And I think that we need to start thinking about the issue in terms of a specific kind of bad guy, not because, I mean, it sounds political. It sounds sort of Molotov cocktail kind of stuff, right? Which nobody wants to go to. But identifying really who are the limited number of bad actors, that's a good thing.
Well, so I for sure think that, you know, if you want to attack the climate crisis, we obviously, the system needs to change, right? So, you know, you shouldn't have to make the choice between, you know, you shouldn't have to look for the least environmentally
damaging kind of thing.
Car, right, that you can find, right? Like, don't look for the one with the highest miles per gallon. Get the electric car and then fight for a system that supports the electric car, right? Or, you know, the automakers, like, they should be getting tons of pressure from all sorts of different arenas to be making electric cars so we can transition to electric cars and then slowly move the grid to renewable energy, not slowly, fast. We need to do this fast. You know? But for sure, like, I think the system changed so that we don't have to make the choices, so that the choices are easy because they're the best choices. Electric cars or solar panels that are total 100%, you know, renewable energy that we just turn on a switch and it's the same.
And at this point, it's not even a noble choice. I mean, it's the economically, things are cheap, right?
Yeah, of course. And so, you know, I think that there's that. But I do think that what we have to do, we have to look in the mirror and sort of say, stop saying, yeah, that's important, but I have other things that are more important to worry about right now. And so I'm not going to go to that march. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not going to write that letter to my legislator. No, I'm not going to make it well known that I think climate change is important, because I don't want to be that person. Like, that, we have to look into the mirror and say, like, every single one of us every single day should be waking up and saying climate change matters. Mm-hmm. And if we do not start making noise about how important it is to us, we won't have the chance to make that noise.
Your point. I mean, that's what you should think when you look in the mirror. I agree. Have I done today to change the system?
Yeah, because that's how, it's not going to change without the pressure and the social license and the paradigm shift that's needed to make those kinds of changes.
Well, dear listener, I hope you take this all to heart. This is you mean the communications, climate information and philosophy and action and justification is an ongoing battle. And I'm glad, Mariah, you're here to help fight that fight. Anyway, we'll put up links to some of the stuff we talked about on the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find it on the podcast on the Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can pick us up on almost any of the modern podcast distribution apps. And of course, you can get us at Apple Podcast by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. Please send us an email with your ideas, complaints, compliments to podcast@massclimateaction.net. We'd love to hear from you. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan, using regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you for being such a great communicator, by the way. And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.